Hare Krishna. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyare Sadari Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Shri Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. My dear devotees, dear friends, I would like to speak during these three sessions, which we have reserved for this, on the art of transformation. Today is an introductory session, and tomorrow is an experience-oriented session. See, the spiritual cultures the world over have always tried to assist humankind in its inner development, which means basically a transformation of the character. This transformation or inner change is at the heart of all spiritual cultures. Srila Prabhupada has once expressed this in the Bhagavatam. He says, the whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart. I always joke when someone goes to a yoga class and then comes home and kicks his dog in the behind. He has not understood what is yoga. If some, there are no politicking spiritualists. If a spiritualist makes politics, he has not changed his heart. There are no cruel monks. A monk who is cruel has not changed the heart. No? There are no mean priests. A priest who is mean has not changed the heart. So the whole process of spiritual culture, it's the point of it, is aimed at changing the heart. I have seen such a heart change in my own life. I do not know if in England you have the phenomena called punk. Are there punks available? We have punks in England. In Berlin we have a lot of them. I was once translating for an English Swami a lecture. He was sitting where I'm sitting now, and the audience was sitting facing him like you are facing me, and I was in the back, maybe there where the door is, and speaking into a translation system which went into with earphones into the listeners. So I was way in the back translating when all of a sudden I could no longer continue. The Swami looked at me, shocked, and said, what happened to the translation? And I must have looked at him like a person who had just been shot. What I had seen and what had stopped me was very unsettling. There was a young punk before me facing the speaker. He was lying on the ground, which is normal for punks in Berlin. That was not shocking. What shocked me that was that underneath his black leather jacket, three white rats emerged and came out. And I was translating, and I looked at my audience, is my translation okay? Do they understand? And one of them was this punk, and the moment I looked at him, these rats came out under his jacket. They were not, pet rats, which you can buy in a pet shop for £5, 10 cents each. No, they were real kennel rats. These carriers of infections and bacteria, and so on. And they came under his jacket, and I had never seen this. It was so appalling. Is the word appalling in English? Repelling. I felt like a mixture of getting up and vomit and heart failure and culture shock and anything, everything shocking. Then he turned around and his lips were pierced with a lot of needles. And he gave me that needle smile. And I almost fainted. I said, I'm sorry I had a senior moment. And what did you just say? I said to the Swami, he repeated. And then I looked down and survived the translation job. A little, maybe half a year after that had happened, I visited the German farm, and on my visit I went into the cow barn, and I saw a cow, a devotee, a cowherd man. He was in an overall, this working dress which farmers have. He was full of cow dung, and he looked at me and smiled. And then I smiled back, and I wanted to just see the cows, so I looked a little around and left. And when I was out of the cow barn, I said, wait a minute. Do I know the person? Do I know this smile? Oh my God, I know that smile. And I went back. And I said to the cowboy, Bagdad, just look in my direction. Haribo. And he had his back towards me, but then he turned around and he gave me that smile, but without the needles. It was the same person, the punk from Berlin, who had now become a devotee after the I talked to him. He's from Australia. He is now serving in Australia, and he's a wonderful devotee, no longer a violent punk. What had happened in the transformation from a punk with a vicious smile? And, I mean, he was the real thing, you know, like it's, I think it started in England. You have one punk called Sid Vicious, I think. Sid Vicious is available in England. I don't know if he's still alive, but in Germany we have a punk lady, Nina Hagen. I preached to her also. I know her very well. Now he was a devotee, and he says still, very good devotee. What has happened so that there is an entire transformation? Obviously, it's easy to change the dress. It's easy to change the hairstyle, no? Just... Krishna and me did it before coming here. We shaved up to look decent. That's easy. But to change the heart is not so easy. What is necessary to do that? Well, I have thought about it, and I have identified six things. There has to be, it starts with a new sense of self. I'm now a devotee of Krishna. I'm no longer a German or an Australian or an Indian. Then the second is a new thinking have to be there, and new feelings, new thought. That is a transformation. Heart, then comes the thinking. Then there have to be new values in my life. It's now important to serve Krishna, to be a selfless, humble soul. That's a new value from which new desires spring. For the transformation, and we want to also see a new behavior, no? A new activity. And a transformation should be so deep that at the end there are new dreams. I'm dreaming of Vrindavan. I used to dream of German towns. Now I'm thinking of Vrindavan. New dreams. Finally, a transformation should bring a new life about. This is what the real transformation means. A new sense of self, a new identity. I'm a soul. New thoughts and feelings. I'm thinking now differently. I should serve Krishna. This is where my life should go. And new feelings. I feel actually dissatisfied when there's a day when I'm not serving Krishna. New values. More. It's so important for me to get my second initiation so that I can go on the altar and serve, and new desires, and then a new behavior. I should have new actions in my life, ultimately, you know, one devotee once told me, Maharaj, he said, every morning I'm waking up and as an atheist. How so? You should. If I tell you my dreams, you will know what I mean. Yes, dreams finally should change, and then a new exciting life should be there. This is what we are looking for, and it is not so easy. The real devotee will be one who has a transformed heart, not just a transformed dress and a transformed hairstyle. it will be deep. In the early times of Christianity, there was a father. He was called Origenes. Origenes had so much. He lived in celibacy, but he would always have dreams, and when he would look at the opposite gender, you know, then he would feel very, very threatened and in his chastity of thoughts. And, you know, finally he was so desperate, he took a knife and cut away his private part because he thought he was so disturbed by it. I don't think his problem has changed, because it's not a matter of you know, it's not a physical thing, it's a mental thing, the attachments. A change of heart cannot be achieved by just external changes alone, at least. There was a yogi in the Bhagavatam who was finding this out. His name is, classical example, Sobari Muni. He lived on a hill near the Jamuna, and for his meditation, he went into the Jamuna River, and he sat on the bottom of the Jamuna because he wanted to have a very disturbance-free environment, and he meditated. Once, as he was meditating, a fish came, a mighty eagle came into the Jamuna, and before his eyes he grabbed a fish and flew away. It was Garuda. Sobari Muni was so incensed, after all he identified with his new environment, and this fish had been his neighbor, that he cursed Garuda. If you come here again, you will die. Garuda is a great Vaishnava, and it is said, it is experienced by unfortunate devotees, that if one commits Vaishnav aparad, one again develops material desires. If your heart is full of material desires, one source could be that you have committed a Vaishnav aparad. It doesn't have to be that, but that's one of the areas which you need to check. Is everything all right in my relationships, my service, my to the Vaishnavas, my thinking of the Vaishnavas, or do I need to improve something? So, Sobari Muni one day was meditating, and right before his eyes he saw a fish couple acting in the act of procreation. Right before his eyes, they were coupling, so to say it. As he watched this, sanskaras, or deep impressions, emerged to the surface of his consciousness, and he thought himself with attraction of the sexual act. He felt aroused. And when the mind is disturbed, one cannot practice yoga, also not the japa. Spiritual practices are not working when the mind is too agitated, because you need the mind, the king of all senses, to cooperate. Now, he was you need I will just say something to Nikinshana. Nikinshana, you are moving your bee bag always, and it looks, because I don't see so good, as if there's a cow who is always using the tail to chase away flies. And I'm thinking I have the association of farming life. So if you wish me to be more peaceful in my mind, then please leave your bee bag for. That would be a great. Thank you, Nishikichan. Very kind of you. So yes, he was not able to keep his meditation, and he thought, I better do something about it. He went to Mathura, where the king Mandata lived, who had three very wonderful sons. I don't know if you know. One of the sons is Ambarish Maharaj. Yes, so the saintly Ambarish, which we know is from that line or that dynasty. And he asked Mandata, I heard you have daughters. I would like to marry one of them. So Mandata looked at the saint. He was covered with algae. His outward appearance looked really unkempt. And he thought, well, oh my God, how can I agree to this? What of my poor daughters? How can they live in peace with such a unkempt person, you know? But he didn't want to offend the yogi. He said, see, my daughters are free to choose their own husband. You may go and see if who chooses you. And he thought, now I'm rid of him, it's all right. But Subari Muni was intelligent. He said, aha, he saw my exterior covered with algae, you know, and matted hair, and no sideburns, and all of this, you know. So he used his mystic potency to transform his body, not into a servant of Krishna, but into a very attractive young man. And he went into the inner quarters where the princesses lived to propose to one of them. Now when the princesses saw this attractive young man entering their quarters, my dear devotees, they were so... they felt so much attraction to him that they all exclaimed in one voice, this man is fit to be my husband. And they were 50 of them. So it was a chorus. Can you imagine 50 aristocratic princesses saying the same thing at the same time? It's a scene which is good for a movie, you know. So Bari Muni said, why not? And he married all of them. And because he was a yogi, he was able to use his mystical powers in two ways. One is he could expand himself into the forms and have into many forms and have association with his wives. And the second is he built a large palatial area with palaces for each one of them by his mystic potency. So at the end of this fall down story, we find Subari Muni stepping back, like I suggested to you this morning, from his life, and he asked himself a question. Am I really satisfied with this? And he said, no. to try to satisfy material desires never really satisfies one. It is like supplying drops of ghee to a fire which further becomes inflamed by the supply of the ghee. So when you have material desires and you follow them, that is, you try to fulfill them, you will inflame them more and they become stronger. He said like this, and he said, the only possibility really to become satisfied is to fix the restless and agitated mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda. And if one needs to have association, one should have association with saintly devotees, which will help one to further fix the mind on Krishna. He realized that, and he called together his wives and said, are you satisfied? And they also said, oh, dear husband, you take so good care of us, but enough is not enough. That's how we feel, you know. So Subari said, let's go to the forest. And he remembered his place at the banks of the Jamuna, where he had sat on a hill and went down for the meditation in the Yamuna. He went there and practiced bhakti yoga, where he engaged his mind in chanting the holy names, hearing about Krishna and remembering him. And again his heart was changed. His heart was transformed in one way when he had committed this unfortunate unfortunate accident with Garuda, where he cursed actually a devotee. His heart became full of material desires and changed in that direction. But now, after having tried to satisfy these desires and remaining dissatisfied, he worshipped Krishna again and his heart transformed. He actually left his body in full Krishna consciousness, and all his wives who had followed him faithfully also began to practice the teachings of their husbands and became fully Krishna conscious and went also back to Godhead. No? It's an example of how transformation works in two ways. It can bring you down and it can bring you up. In the scriptures, the word karma and prema, lust and love, derive from the same Sanskrit root, and they are very much connected. In our teachings of Chaitanya Charitamrita, karma or lust is compared with gold, and love is compared with gold. Both are metals, but one is a very very pure metal and the other is a very low metal. They are both based on desire. This is the common factor. But desire can be very pure and desire can be very low class or selfish. If you imagine yourself in the human form of life as standing in the middle of a ladder, you know what is a ladder? I have to make sure that some keywords are sure, because my pronunciation in English is not always the way you're used to it. It's with a strong German accent. Ladder. It has a staircase. It's also a staircase. Ladder.
Ladder.
Ladder. No, it's a very common Leiter is the German, but a ladder. Imagine you stand in the middle. You have the choice now to go down or to go up. In the human form of life, this choice is there. If you look towards the senses and towards your selfish satisfaction, you will go down like Subhari Muni. If you look up towards Krishna, the example of devotees, the true purpose of life, to become God conscious and return back to Godhead, you will naturally go up. It's a transformation. This we can already note down in our notebooks and in our hearts. It's a matter of in what direction you choose to climb the ladder of life. Once again, transformation is a matter of deciding in which direction will you choose to climb the ladder of desire. If you go down for selfish enjoyment, you will become like Subhari Muni in his face when he was so overwhelmed with desire that he used all his austerities to just facilitate this, to take on an appropriate body, to take care of a good household arrangement. In his case, he needed many palaces and a park and a garden and so on. Now you can use the your abilities, your opportunities to go up and become a wonderful devotee like Sutapa Prabhu. No? It is depending on in what direction you look. No? This is really depending on this question. Now, there are, and this will be my last, this is the last point, yes, because I want to give some process. In our I want to give you a little cultural background. Has any one of you heard about the early alchemists? These were people who were going to the court of the European kings. There was one living at the court of the Danish king. European history, I used to be very good in it, but I've forgotten many things. I can't tell you the name. It's not so important. Who cares about Kami kings? They were everywhere, and they were working, the alchemists were known to have formulas which they could change ordinary metal into gold. There is a lot of dispute nowadays if it is all a swindle, it was cheating, but it is also, there are some books which I had read before I came to Krishna consciousness, when I was very interested in alchemy, where the formulas are revealed. They use usually quicksilver is a very important thing, and then they put it on lead and then do something, and then apparently it turns into gold. Now it's very important that these people were often misunderstood. They had some spiritual intention. They wanted to find the formula how to change a character, a human being. And they thought this formula will be the same formula which we can utilize to transform ordinary metal into gold. This was the idea. They were mystics. They were interested in the elevation of the human consciousness, and they wanted to find out the principles which they then would apply to convince ordinary people in changing metal into gold. No? This was the idea. Now, it is was very interesting for me when I found this subject in our scriptures. I read in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, second Vilas, text 12, this amazing verse. Can I share it with you? As bell metal, it's like copper, when mixed with mercury, can be turned into gold, a person, even though Prabhupada says he's not golden pure, he's not pure, he can be transformed into a dvija brahmana simply by the initiation process. So the Hari Bhakti Vilas says, just like you can change ordinary metal into gold by a certain process, you can take an ordinary person and change him. He can be transformed into a very first class Brahmin. Dvija means a second born person. He has a new chance in life. Like our earlier example of the young man from Berlin who turned into a wonderful devotee. What is this process, you might ask yourself, that can help me, an ordinary person from England, yes, and India and Germany and wherever, to change really into an ecstatic person who has a new understanding of who he is, new thoughts and feelings, new values and desires, behavior, and ultimately a new life. How can I change and become a blissful human being? Wouldn't that be nice to be a blissful human being? A person, as Prabhupada describes, who is above the clouds, the mental clouds, full of happiness, with an infectious joy. Wouldn't that be nice, my dear devotees? Niskanchana, you are on my side. We are dressed in the same color. We are having similar opinions. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us a certain process which you find is taught in the Krishna conscious movement. He uses ancient expressions. He says, with that initiation into which transforms everything, there are five things which are given. The Urdhva Pundra, it means a tilak. Tilak means a new sense of identity. Jip, you make like this, and it means I'm a servant of Krishna. I always have to laugh. I feel naked in shirts and pants. I feel only properly dressed in a dhoti. I mean, just since almost 50 years I'm going like this, so I feel unusual. When I go in the winter out for a fast walk, I have a good set of training pants and so on. But when I go to the dentist, for torture. Because I don't want philosophical discussions, I want this to be over now. Because when you go like this, you immediately, the whole world is wanting to talk to you, or you want to talk to them, and sometimes you. So. But normally I'm like this and like this, and when I cross borders, the people always look at me and say, a bird? You know, they're called officers, no? The tall officer. A bird? No, I say, no. I would have wiped that off. No, this is Urva Pundra. This is a tilak. And then I explain, I'm actually trying to be a devotee of Krishna, and I see this body as the temple, and this is the sign of a Vaishnava. Then they become, sorry, they say, we wear little disres. No problem, you're from the Western culture. I used to also think like this. No. It has to be there for completeness. My outfit is only complete with this. Urdhva Pundra. It means also the path which leads upwards. That's what this means, you know, a path which leads up. You stand on the ladder and you climb up, not down. And you express this with a tilak. Urdhva Pundra. Then comes some rules for your behavior, tapa, four rules and regulations. Don't intoxicate yourself. Don't eat meat. Don't have illicit sexual relationships. Don't have any gambling. No? Just this helps the transformation process, because you can't go down and up. You make up your mind. Do you want to go up or do you want to go down? Do you want to go into the area of mindless sense gratification, or do you want to go up? Then yagya. Yagya means you worship Krishna. Nama means you chant the holy name, and later mantras come. No? These things are there in the initiation process, the Urdhva Pundra, the tilak, which indicates a new sense of identity. I'm now a servant of Krishna. Body is made for his service. This is a temple. Some tapa. I will not do materialistic activities any longer. Some worship is there. Oh, Krishna. And some chanting of his holy name. Krishna, 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 Krishna. And you also get a new name. All of a sudden you are Haridas, or Hari Govinda Devi Dasi, or whatever. Mantras. You chant with your certain mantras, Namo Om Vishnu Padaya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, etc. And later you get you are an acknowledged twice born. You get a Brahmin initiation, and you are able to go on the altar and approach God with many personal services. Yes, this is a transformation process, my dear devotees. How does this work? The transformation process will work when you have some energies working on you. That is the bhakti shakti, which is in these processes which I have mentioned to you, especially worship of Krishna, chanting his names and chanting his mantras. We have the bhakti shakti, the spiritual energy, the energy of Krishna who works on you. Let's go back to our example of the alchemists who would turn ordinary metal or bell metal with some mercury and a process, certain process, into gold. What are they facing in their laboratories? Well, they face it's a physical force, it's called the strong force. The strong force is what keeps the molecules together, what keeps them in their place. It's, you know, by the strong force, this is not a good example. This is metal, and you know, these little molecules or atoms, let us go to the atoms, are kept in their place by a physical force. It's called the strong force. Now, this whole force keeps the whole world the way it is. If this moves, then this becomes water. If the strong force is broken, then it can turn into wood or Himalayan mountains or so on. It's that physical force, strong force. I'm not an expert on this. I can't explain it in a better way, but it's a correct understanding. So when you want to change, my dear devotees, you are facing the strong force of Maya, which is keeping you the way you are. You need some energy to do this, and it cannot be your own energy. It must be the energy of God, the Bhakti Shakti. It's called technically the Chladini and Samvit Shaktis who work. The pleasure-giving potency and the knowledge-giving potency, which are the two potencies of the Bhakti Shakti. Enough theory. Could you follow what I was trying to say? Some of you look a little tired. A typical facial expression of the Pandava Senas. I will have to use some hype, I think, or some heavy acronyms. Push, push, push. Pray until something happens. I will say something like this. Then you will, ooh. Krishna, Krishna. No, try to understand. Don't look tired. Try to understand. It will be very useful for you. Very useful. Because I think we all agree, it's so easy to make an external change in our life, but you won't be able to stay in Krishna consciousness with these things unless your heart changes, unless your desire changes, unless you are seeing the Lord on the mirror of your heart, like Prabhupada said this morning. You will not be able to keep this up. You will not be like our Shruti Dharma, who, when he faces a terminal illness, he just takes shelter in Krishna and is joyful, and so on. It is really important for your own well-being that you transform the heart and change the heart. This is not a movement for just external changes. It is something very profound. You should become overwhelmed with divine love. Huh? And die, I mean not die, this is too early, but you should experience now in your youth a full Krishna consciousness, become a very valuable member of our wonderful society, become actually a teacher in your own rights of Krishna consciousness. And for this, it needs to be real. Some work will have to be done. So tomorrow, my dear devotees, in my session tomorrow, yes, it's here. In my session tomorrow, I will give you an idea how to do this. I will go through three very powerful transformational agents which are imbued with this Bhakti Shakti, that can change your heart, and I will teach you tomorrow also wonderful by giving you a wonderful example, and yes, and a wonderful prayer also. Hare Krishna. So I will end here this session. We have a little time for questions if you do have any. Yes, Prabhuji, your good name, please.
Yogesh.
Yogesh, what a wonderful name. Yogesh, yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Yogesh.
You mentioned that each traveling soul has got an inherent ability, to see Krishna in one's heart.
Yeah.
Are you referring to the essential character of the soul, which is Satchit Anand? That is the case, then do all the souls effectively have the same personality? And just to build on that, I would in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
The spiritual bodies which are there, is their essential personality defined by that particular spiritual body's relationship with Krishna? Is that the only difference? So here as well, I'm just sort of wanting to understand by that inherent ability.
Mm-hmm.
Do we all have the same inherent ability, or do we still retain certain essential personality which is attached to our spiritual body?
You are wonderful. It's a wonderful question, Yogesh Babu. Very thoughtful and very... Yes, I'm somehow able to answer this question, I believe. Have you all understood Yogesh's question? Now, let me first establish the main point. Yes, we have the ability of reflecting Krishna or receiving Krishna, and Vishwanath Chakravarti as souls we have this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very nice example. He speaks of a golden roof. The golden roof made of gold has the ability to reflect sun. When the sun rises, like maybe in Sri Rangam, there's a golden temple, the inner temple, the many Gopurams, and then it comes to the altar, and the altar building, that the altar is on, is covered with a golden roof, very, very heavy plated. I think it's such thick gold, it's really valuable. So when the sun rises, it reflects on there. A black roof, for instance, with black tar, doesn't have this ability. It swallows the sun rays. It doesn't reflect them. So we as souls have all the ability to respond to Krishna, just like the golden roof. Krishna's mercy comes, and we can, and that is visible in our heart, not like the sun rays, which are now visible on the gold. That the gold shines, and so on. Now, this is in general. Now, when we are in the spiritual world and we have a certain relationship to Krishna, we all will reflect Krishna in accordance to this relationship, because in our analogy, Krishna is like the sun and the soul is like that golden roof. This analogy serves us for an initial understanding, but not for a more advanced understanding. See, Krishna is not like the sun, which is a static material thing. It's always the same. Krishna has many facets, many aspects. He's therefore considered to be like a Vaidhuyamani, which shines in different colors. It's a jewel, golden color, greenish, red, all the colors. So Krishna shines on the soul with many rasas, many relationships. He makes himself available for many relationships, for the servants in the of Krishna. He's the young prince of Braj who needs their service. He needs someone to carry his flutes, and when he goes out and takes care of herding the cows, some of these servants have pots which are covered with the jeweled pots which carry water, which are covered with a beautiful white silken cloth so that the dust from the pollen doesn't come into the water. It must be clear water, camphor-scented and saffron-scented water. And they carry this and they keep it, it's described, this pot of water as important as their life, you know, because it's the way to serve the young prince of Braj. Then they are very respectful, they move in a little distance. Then there are other relationships like the Sakas, the cowherd boys who go with Krishna, and they play the flutes like Krishna plays, they dance with him, and when they come to a nice place they will even wrestle with Krishna and see Krishna more like their chum, you know, like their good friend. And Krishna allows this relationship. For them, he is no longer the prince of Braj, but he's the best friend who makes jokes with them and who deals with them on an equal level. Then there's Mother Yashoda and the elderly gopis and gopas who feel a parental affection to Krishna, who feel he needs to be protected. Mother Yashoda goes to the cowherd boys again and again and says, "My boy has one problem. He doesn't know his limits. And you go behind him, you go left and right, and you go in front in case he runs and wants to play with a tiger." Like this. A protective mood. And so Krishna lends himself to all these relationships. For Mother Yashoda, he's the helpless little boy, always. For the Sakas, he's always the friend. For the servants, he's always the prince of Braj. And for each one of us, he is also something special. I have seen when I discuss with Gaur Krishna and when we discuss in the Gaura Bhavan, each devotee has a certain understanding of Krishna, and it's all right. Krishna speaks about this in the Gita. Yeya tamang papadyante tams tadhaiva bhajam yamam. I reveal myself in the way someone worships me. You know, he's like this. He's not just one person with one capacity, with one face, with one ability, with one character, nature. He is multi-faceted. It's called Akila Rasamrita Sindhu, an ocean of unlimited relationships in which he reveals himself. So, but it's very important to start with the understanding. I can reflect Krishna. I can catch the sun rays of His presence. And I can be made Krishna conscious in His presence. You know, it's here where we start. And then as we go on, more and more Krishna will reveal Himself. And we will respond to this revelation, our individual relationship. Prabhupada makes a very nice point in the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila. This was pointed out to me by His Holiness Kadamba Karana Maharaj, and I found it in the book, that when a devotee hears about the pastimes of Krishna, this can indicate his particular relationship to Krishna. He hears a pastime and he feels, wow, this pastime, how the way Krishna deals here, wow, I find this really good. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. Yogeshji. Good. Anyone else? Sutapati.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, you talked a little bit about transformation of our hearts. And recently I've been thinking that, like, day to day we undergo so many different emotions and we see so many different things within ourselves. Sometimes you have like a few nice days of chanting and you think, I'm really getting somewhere here. And then after a few days, then we observe something else within us. So day to day, there's so many fluctuations. Even some devotees were sharing that sometimes they just wake up in the morning and externally there's nothing wrong, but they just feel for some reason dissatisfied. They can't put a finger on it. So day to day we undergo so many different fluctuations, so how can we actually understand what transformation is going on? Can you give us some parameters or some idea of how to gauge the transformation?
Yes, Srila Prabhupada, thank you Sutapapu, and thank you for this very relevant question. Yeah, these fluctuations which we are undergoing, and we may sometimes ask, is something happening? Is it working with me? You know. Well, you can see that it is working by one parameter. Your desires change. You do not want any longer this thing. You feel disturbed when there is something in the mind which is not appropriate at this time. And you want a real life. You can say, I don't want this. See, the soul in this world is not in control of anything. It can only desire. The rest is happening to it by either Krishna's mercy or Maya's arrangements. That's our freedom to desire. And when you feel that the desire is changing, and you know the fluctuations, Sutapa, they are there. It is something ingrained. It's called sanskaras, old impressions. So I have seen even older devotees will sometimes be able to sing to you a song of the Rolling Stones. You know, that's still there. They were impressed in their old age, in their young age, by I can't get no satisfaction. And it's still there. You know, it's a biological thing. It comes with the body. But they don't wish the lifestyle they had before coming to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada speaks about this in a very nice quotation. I found it in the Brahmachari book God Krishna gave me yesterday as something to write on, and I looked into it, and this quotation I know. Even saints have sometimes thinking and feeling for the opposite gender. Thinking and even feeling. It is coming from old sanskaras. But the willing is not there. They don't want. That's how nice he was expressing, no? And the desire, when the desire is changing, there you know. Fluctuations, what can we do? We are in the inky atmosphere of the material world. This is coming, you know, material thoughts. But what will you do now? What is your desire? Where do you want to go? Therefore, this example helps very nicely that you are on the ladder. If you want to look upwards, you will climb upwards, even if there are some smells from downwards coming, you know, some old things, and you don't want any longer. This is a litmus test. Do you know what is a litmus? Litmus is, you can hold it into liquids, and then you can see by the way it colors, you can see different things. You know, it's used in medicine and so on when there are bodily liquids have to be investigated by a litmus test, and you put this in and then you see by the reaction. So you can make a litmus test. You can put it in your heart. You can see in your heart and see what is the color of the heart, whether there is has something changed. And it's this one point, my desire. This my desire is changing. We are weak. We are not the controllers of the material energy. But Krishna is responding to the real desires. Krishna. Yes, Mataji, I see your hand. What is your name, Mataji? Nitya Priya Radha, yes.
Maharaj, we are talking of desires here, so when you said about those six things, one of them you said is the desires. Now, what I sometimes actually I wonder that how significant, you know, should be the desires in our life? Because is it the duty which is more important or the desire? Because desires can take away from the duty, whether it is the material duty or the spiritual duty. So,
Mm-hmm.
I personally, I feel that duties are more important.
Mm-hmm.
I just
want
to know what you have to say.
Yes. It's a very nice question also. I think when you face the big world of desires, you have to see what is essential, what is a desire which is, let me say, helpful, which is a conscious desire, a conscious decision, or what is a desire which comes and goes. I would like to say, for instance, I think as you have. Well, let us say there is a person who really wants to fulfill his duty or her duty as a mother, as a wife, as a in a certain service, in the service. No? That is a, but then all of a sudden a desire comes up. Oh, wouldn't it be nice to just have a little holiday now? Or to relax and move and do something else now. Now you have to see what is the predominant desire here. And the predominant desire from a person who is duty driven is to fulfill the duty. Mm-hmm. There are other people who are driven on inspirations. They feel when I act on an inspiration, that is really then I'm strongest. There are such people. There are other people who are driven by very much by love. They do everything out of love. There are various motivations, but if we find ourselves to be a person whose highest value is to keep the duty, then that's you, that must be done. And when some disturbing thought comes up which distracts you from this, you could see this is a secondary desire, and these secondary desires always come and go. In psychology they have the 10-minute rule. Let us give a simple example. Someone really has understood, I kill myself if I eat chocolate. It's too much, you know. I'm already overweight for 80 kilos is too much. I should be, according to healthy things, you know, I should be, I don't know. I'm not an expert in kilos. I don't even know what is my weight, but, you know. I'm too much overweight. I'm 100 kilos overweight, let us say. And it comes from my chocolate habit. So this person lives a healthy regime. He needs to become free from his innumerable diseases because of chocolate eating. But then comes the chocolate craving. Ugh. Chocolate, chocolate, chocolate. It's allowed by the GBC. And then what to do is they arise, these cravings, and they will go. Also, that is the nature of cravings. You just wait 10 minutes and usually it's gone. I mean, I do not know about these things so well. I'm trying to give modern examples, you know what I want to express. There are these fleeting desires coming and going. We don't need to act upon them. They're not important. Yes. I think, my dear devotees, time is also there, and we have now spent a lot of time together. I thank you very much. I'm hearing that Sutapa Prabhu will give... Oh, Shantanu is there. Please give us an orientation that we know where we are going.